Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, January 14th, 2020. Coming up this hour,
the White House lifts its label on China as a currency manipulator.
Preparations get underway for the signing of a Phase 1 trade agreement.
Earnings season starts with reports from J.P. Morgan and Citigroup.
And Boeing comes under more fire for communications on its troubled MAX jet.
The House is expected to turn over two articles of impeachment this week. Plus, it's debate night for the Democratic presidential candidates. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. LSU capped a perfect season, beat Clemson to win college football's national championship. At the Garden, the Rangers routed the Islanders.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good Tuesday morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And U.S. futures are little changed to higher this after yesterday's record close for the S&P 500. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up a point. Dow futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 2. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. CAC in Paris up about 0.1%. And the FTSE 100 is up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32nds, yield 1.83%. And the yield on the 2-year 1.58%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.1% or 7 cents at $58.14 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.3% or $5.90 at $15.44.70 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1132 against the dollar. The yen 110.02. Nathan.
And Karen, today it's all about developments on the U.S.-China trade front. First, we have the Trump administration lifting its designation of China as a currency manipulator, saying the country has made enforceable commitments not to devalue the yuan. We get more from Bloomberg's Selena Wang in Beijing.
It's certainly a sign of warming of relations. We don't have any official response from Beijing about this, but of course they were very angered by the move when Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin had announced this. And it's not too much of a surprise, though, to Beijing that they're now reversing this, given that he had said months ago that if a trade deal were to be signed, they would consider removing that tag.
Now, the move to drop China as a currency manipulator came in the Treasury Department's semiannual foreign exchange report. The document was scheduled for release 3 months ago, but then delayed as the U.S. and China negotiated over trade.
Up next, the U.S. and China sign a Phase 1 trade agreement. Sources tell us that happens tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. in the East Room of the White House. Here with more is Sean Donnan from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Clearly, we're going to get a lot of efforts by both sides to try and build up that Phase 1 deal and sort of register some wins. We'll wait and see exactly what the substance of the deal is, but there are still a lot of questions about where we go to from here. And it's not just whether China lives up to Phase 1, it's whether we ever get a Phase 2.
And we'll also get a first look at all 86 pages of the Phase 1 agreement, which is expected to include commitments on U.S. intellectual property and new purchases of American farm products.
Now, in the meantime, we have fresh trade data out of China overnight showing the country's imports and exports both surged in December. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis brings us more from Hong Kong.
Imports jumped 16.3% year-on-year, compared to an estimate of 9.6%. The Phase 1 deal calming fears somewhat. Exports up 7.6%, much better than the Bloomberg survey. Still, trade with the United States was troubled, declining 11% on the year in yuan terms. The trade surplus with the United States, $296 billion U.S. dollars, down from $323 billion. The EU is China's largest trading partner, followed by ASEAN and then the United States. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Brian, thank you. The strong trade data and pending trade deal helped stocks in Asia post modest gains overnight. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with the details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. China CSI 300 was down around 0.3%, but elsewhere sentiment was strong. Australia's ASX 200 finishing at a fresh record. Taiwanese stocks holding at 30-year highs and South Korea's KOSPI holding at April 2019 levels. Japan's Nikkei 225 rose 0.7%, resuming trade after Monday's holiday. But in the Philippines, stocks in the peso declined as trading resumed in the nation following the shuttering of markets Monday due to the eruption of Volcano Taal. In Singapore, I'm Julie. At Sally, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thanks. And while the U.S. and China spat hits the pause button, a new trade fight between Europe and the White House could be about to ramp up. Here with details is Bloomberg's Sebastian Salik, live from our London bureau. Sebastian, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The European Union's new trade chief is heading to Washington for wide-ranging talks. Phil Hogan will meet with U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and other American officials to rebuild ties that have frayed in recent months. While President Trump has held back on a threat to hit European cars and auto parts with tariffs that are much dreaded in the EU, both sides have revived old disputes and triggered new ones as a result of fundamental disagreements over trade policy. And a standoff between the West and Iran only adds to the complexity. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salik, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Sebastian, thank you. Turning to markets now, earnings will be a big driver today as the first three major banks report results. And here with more, Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky.
We'll hear from J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo today as banks close the books on another lucrative year. Analysts surveyed by Bloomberg expect to see an 18% rise in earnings per share at J.P. Morgan, 14% at Citigroup, and a 1% decline at Wells Fargo. Analysts say the streak of record-breaking earnings for U.S. banks has probably peaked. Estimates for 2020 are for a combined profit drop of $10 billion as global interest rates remain stubbornly low and geopolitical tensions stay high. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Larry. Now, Boeing doesn't report earnings till later this month, but right now it's coming under more fire for internal communications related to its troubled MAX jet. And joining us live with details is Bloomberg's John Tucker. John, good morning.
Yeah, Nathan. Lion Air considered putting its pilots through simulator training before flying the 737 MAX, but dropped the idea after Boeing convinced them in 2017 it was unnecessary. Internal Boeing communications show Lion Air's initial request for training was met with contempt. One Boeing employee in an email called them stupid and idiots. A year later, 189 people died when a Lion Air MAX crashed. That was blamed on inadequate training. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. And on the M&A front, Visa has agreed to acquire Plaid for $5.3 billion. Plaid is a fintech firm that connects popular apps like Venmo to customer data in the banking system. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. It looks like President Trump's impeachment trial will likely fully get underway next week. According to a person familiar with the plans, the House is poised to vote tomorrow on the impeachment managers named by Speaker Nancy Pelosi. It would be followed by a vote to authorize transmittal of the articles to the Senate. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez says there's a small number of witnesses that can shed real light on what transpired.
They have the power in their hands. Either we will get witnesses because Republicans who are being patriots and not partisans will join us to have witnesses. And if we don't have witnesses, it will be because Republicans wanted a whitewash and not a real transparent trial.
Six Democratic presidential candidates qualified to be on the debate stage tonight at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. It is the last debate ahead of next month's Iowa caucuses. Former VP Joe Biden talked about recent poll numbers showing a tight race in Iowa. Biden, calling it a toss-up, says his support is across various demographic groups.
We represent the broadest coalition of people, not just any one segment of the party, but young, old, brown, black, people, women, men.
Bloomberg will bring you live coverage of the debate starting at 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time. And following the debate, we'll have a special edition of Sound On with Kevin Cirilli live from Iowa. Iran said it has arrested a number of people linked to the January 8th downing of a Ukrainian passenger jet, killing 176 people on board. The country's president called on the judiciary to form a special court and fully investigate the disaster. The 21 Saudi nationals training at the Pensacola Naval Station in Florida will be sent back to Saudi Arabia. An investigation found 17 of the trainees had jihadi literature. The announcement comes over a month after the deadly shooting rampage by a Saudi airman who opened fire on American military at the base. Attorney General William Barr says the shooter made some posts on social media.
During the course of the investigation, we learned that the shooter posted a message on September 11th of this year stating, "The countdown has begun."
Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, what a year for LSU, and especially for its quarterback, Joe Burrow, a former backup at Ohio State, a relative unknown at the start of the season. Burrow won the Heisman Trophy in a landslide in 15 games. He threw 60 touchdown passes, five more last night as LSU dethroned last year's winner, Clemson, 42-25. Burrow and LSU go 15-0 and win the national championship.
Feels good. I don't know what else to say. I mean, there's been so many people that have come into this, from people that have helped me along my journey from Ohio, Louisiana, everywhere. And we couldn't have done it with a better group of guys. Not just football players, but great, great men that I just feel blessed to be a part of this.
In a few months, Burrow is expected to be headed to Cincinnati, the likely first pick of the NFL draft. Took a few months before the first Ranger-Islander game of the season at the Garden. All blue shirts, 6-2. Artemi Panarin having a big season. He had a big night, 2 goals, 3 assists. Houston Astros still in the books for having won the 2017 World Series, but that title is certainly tainted. The Astros used an elaborate technology-aided sign-stealing system. Baseball yesterday punished them. A $5 million fine, the most they could dole out. First and second round draft picks taken away for 2 years. Astros manager A.J. Hinch and their general manager Jeff Luhnow were both suspended and then both fired. The Astros beat the Yankees in the ALCS that year 4-3, and all four of their wins came in Houston. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanshower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. The NFL continues to rack up the ratings. The Kansas City Chiefs come from behind. Victory over the Houston Texans drew more than 35 million viewers on CBS. That was up 21% from last year's matchup. And the Packers-Seahawks game attracted an even bigger audience. Viewership peaked at more than 42 million, making it the most watched event of the weekend and the top telecast since the last Super Bowl, according to Fox. Futures little changed as we await bank earnings this morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Life's an adventure. Experience it in the new Land Rover Discovery Sport. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Discovery Sport. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks erased a decline along with U.S. stock index futures as investors await the start of U.S. earnings season and officials prepare to sign the China trade deal in Washington. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ both rose to records yesterday. The yuan is holding close to its strongest level since July. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are a little changed. Dow futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 2. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.83%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.57%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.3% or 18 cents at $58.26 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.4% or $6.10 at $15.44.50 an ounce. The euro, 1.1130 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2971. And the yen is at 110.04. And today we're watching for reports on consumer prices at 8:30 Wall Street time. Well, ahead of that, we get a look at small business optimism at 6. J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo are among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Senate Republicans are signaling they will reject the idea of simply voting to dismiss the articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump. As the House prepares to send the charges to the chamber, senators are still negotiating the ground rules for the historic trial. Trump has suggested Republicans could dismiss the charges, but key senators say that is not likely and they want to hear the case. It is debate night for the Democratic presidential candidates. Bloomberg will bring you the debate live from Iowa with coverage starting at 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time. In college football, LSU won the national championship game, beating Clemson 42-25. In the NHL, the Rangers beat the Islanders, the Bruins lost, the Capitals won. In the NBA, the Celtics won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's 519 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Want to bring in Lori Calvasina this morning, head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets, as we watch markets, at least this morning, kind of in a holding pattern before the phase one trade deal is signed and earnings season really gets underway. What are you going to be looking for as these events play out, Lori?
So to be honest, I'm a little more focused on earnings than I am the trade news. The earnings season is always a fascinating kickoff with the banks, and we get to hear what's going on with the banks, but the banks also kind of take responsibility for answering all of investors' macro questions. So I think one of the things we'll be listening for today is really what's going on with corporate confidence. How have things like the developments on the trade war, things that are going on in the political realm, how are those affecting corporate customers is something we're really going to be listening for.
Well, what's your expectation on what we could hear from the banks, given what results we've seen so far from them?
So, you know, our take, and this is just sort of thinking generally about the reporting season, what we heard sort of at the tail end of the last one and some of the chatter early on. But really, we're a bit concerned that markets are overly celebrating the developments on the trade war. What we saw at the tail end of the last reporting season was really that markets were cheering the coming of phase one, but the corporates weren't really reacting that much to it. So we thought maybe markets were getting a little bit ahead of themselves or overly celebrating the news. And we are concerned that perhaps we're just sort of exchanging tensions on the geopolitical front, tensions regarding the 2020 election for the trade war. So we're a little bit worried that the kind of overall uncertainty on the policy realm, that overhang hasn't gone away.
So are you concerned then that the trade tensions could revert over to Europe now that the phase one deal is being signed between China and that could potentially pose a headwind for equities?
Well, you know, Europe is something that's definitely on the radar, I would say, in certain industries with certain investors. But the thing that I frankly haven't loved on the trade front is the fact that phase two with the China trade negotiations are supposed to start up this year as well. So we are a little bit concerned that, you know, we are getting some good news in terms of this currency manipulation news. The phase one signing, of course, is being celebrated. But what's coming up in phase two? That's really where the hard stuff is supposed to be.
Now, even with that backdrop, you've slightly revised higher your year-end target for the S&P 500. What's got you looking at least a little bit optimistically on the equity front?
Yeah, so our view on 2020 is that it's going to be a year of moderation, turbulence, and transition. Moderation really speaks to our view as a whole. We're looking for about a 7% gain in the S&P 500 this year. We've got a target of 3460. We did tweak it up a little bit last week. But the turbulence part of our forecast really speaks to our near-term concern. So like a lot of other strategists around the street, and we've held this view for some time, frankly, but we are worried that valuations are starting to get stretched in the short term. And if you look at the CFTC data on U.S. equity futures positioning, it's also starting to look extremely euphoric. This market feels to me today very much like January 2018, December 2017, around the tax reform peak in the market when there was very good news from a policy perspective, but it simply got pulled into the market early in a very, very sort of quick and ferocious way to the upside. Of course, that January 2018 peak was pulled by a 10% drawdown. Now, we have been saying that we think the risk of a near-term pullback is high, but if we get it, we think it's something more like that January 2018 drawdown, not like the 4Q 2018 drawdown. We don't think it would derail the year.
Well, if there is a possibility for that kind of drawdown, where do you see opportunity in this market?
So we're really kind of playing for the year as opposed to the short-term drawdown. Short-term in terms of the drawdown, though, I would tell you I think utilities are a really interesting way to add defense to your portfolio. There's very little policy risk on the utilities sector, specifically in regards to the 2020 election. And again, we've got, you know, you guys have mentioned we've got that debate coming up tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're thinking about the year as a whole and you're willing to sort of ride out that turbulent period, we very much like sectors like financials and industrials. They're the most economically sensitive parts of the market right now in terms of how they trade. They're also deeply undervalued and ETF flows are starting to stabilize. So we think we've got a very nice setup here for the year as a whole.
And just quickly, what do you see underperforming in this market in the last 10 or 15 seconds here?
Yeah, we've been telling people to pare back on consumer discretionary stocks. They tend to underperform when ISM new orders are rising, if you kick out the internet names. Basically, consumer resiliency has been well understood. It's been priced in. These stocks aren't cheap. People have been hiding out in these stocks for the past year, and we think they're really going to be a source of funding for this rotation into cheaper cyclical areas throughout the year.
Lori Calvasina, always great having you on. Thanks so much for being with us. That's Lori Calvasina, head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Little change on the equity markets as we await the first of the Wall Street banks to report their fourth quarter earnings. Right now, S&P futures little changed. Dow futures higher by 15 points. NASDAQ futures little changed. This is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by the Breakers Palm Beach. This winter paradise is just a short flight away. Escape to the warmth of the Breakers Palm Beach. See why Florida's most iconic beachfront resort is better than ever. Visit thebreakers.com or call 1-800-BREAKERS.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130.
To Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991.
To Boston.
Bloomberg 1061.
To San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960.
To the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119.
And around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Eisner Amper, named Best Global Accounting Firm for the third year in a row by Hedgeweek, a leading hedge fund industry publication. Learn more at EisnerAmper.com/FS.
We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are a little changed this morning following several developments on the U.S.-China trade front. First, the Trump administration is lifting its designation of China as a currency manipulator, saying Beijing has made enforceable commitments not to devalue the yuan. Alan Sinai is a strategist at Decision Economics.
I didn't think the label was correct in the first place. I think it was part of the political back and forth and the prelude to the very tough trade discussions that we've had, and now this is another step in the process of melting down and pulling back from the tremendous confrontation that went on during 2019.
Up next, the U.S. and China sign a Phase 1 trade agreement. Sources tell us that'll happen tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. at the White House. Here with more is Sean Donnan from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Wednesday morning, we'll get about 200 people plus at the White House for what is likely to be a bit of a victory lap for the Trump administration. They finally are going to roll out this Phase 1 deal. We're also going to see for the first time the text of that agreement, and that will be where the devil is, the devil always being in the details.
Meantime, we have fresh trade data out of China showing the country's imports and exports surged in December. Exports rose 7.6%, while imports were up more than 16%. We get the details from Bloomberg's Lena Wang in Beijing.
Now, a big reason for this beat is likely that improving sentiment as a result of the U.S.-China trade truce and a boost in exports, given the expectation that there at least wouldn't be any more tariff escalations in the near term. So orders picking up there. This could also be due to some front loading as a result of Chinese New Year's being a little bit earlier this year, coming up in January.
For all of 2019, exports increased 0.5% and imports declined 2.8%.
Back here in the U.S., earnings will be a big driver for markets today. We get results from J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo.
Meantime, Boeing is under more fire for internal communications related to its troubled MAX jet. Joining us live with details is Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And Karen, in one Boeing email, an employee refers to Lion Air officials as stupid and idiots for requesting simulator training on the 737 MAX. Boeing eventually convinced the airline to drop the request. That was 2017. The next year, 189 people died when a Lion MAX jet plunged into the Java Sea, and that was blamed in part on inadequate training. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. And futures again, that'll change this morning. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks much. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. President Donald Trump's impeachment trial is likely to get fully underway next week. A person familiar with the plan says the House will meet today and is poised to vote tomorrow on the impeachment managers named by Speaker Nancy Pelosi, followed by a vote to authorize transmittal of the articles to the Senate. Trump then would have 2 days to respond to a summons to provide his defense. Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told his colleagues they may soon be ready to move forward with President Trump's impeachment trial. McConnell also took a swipe at the integrity of the impeachment investigation.
The articles of impeachment they had drafted were more like a censure resolution based on partisan anger than an actual impeachment based on careful investigation.
House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff says he's hopeful that some Republicans push McConnell to allow witnesses.
If McConnell succeeds in dismissing this case without witnesses, it will be the first impeachment case, not just involving a president, but involving anyone in the nation's history in which a trial went forward without witnesses.
Schiff spoke on ABC's The View. Democratic presidential candidates are set to debate tonight in Des Moines, Iowa. It's the last debate before Iowa's leadoff caucuses set for February 3rd. Bloomberg will carry tonight's debate live. Coverage starts at 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time. And following the debate, we'll have a special edition of Sound On with Kevin Cirilli live from Iowa. The Iranian government announced they have made arrests in the accidental shooting of a Ukrainian International Airlines jet last week. All 176 people on board the jet were killed. A spokesman for Iran's judiciary did not say how many were arrested, but said an extensive investigation was conducted. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says Iraqi leaders have privately told him in repeated phone calls that they want U.S. troops to stay, despite their public pronouncements to the contrary. Pompeo also called Iranian General Soleimani, killed in the U.S. drone strike, one of the world's deadliest terrorists, and said his death was intended to send Iran a message.
President Trump and those of us in his national security team are reestablishing deterrence, real deterrence, against the Islamic Republic.
Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, national championship game in New Orleans. Two teams named Tigers, both undefeated coming in. Slow start for LSU. Clemson led by 10. Largest deficit LSU faced all year, but LSU poured it on from there. Finished the first half with 3 touchdowns in 9 minutes. Finished the game by outscoring Clemson 35-8 to make the final 42-25. Heisman Trophy winner Joe Burrow threw for 463 yards and 5 touchdowns and said he knew it was just a matter of time.
You can't hold us down for forever. You know, I think we're too explosive. Our coaches are too good. Our players are too good. Our O-line is too good. And, you know, they had a great plan coming in. Like I said, Coach Venables is great at what he does, and it just took us a while to get it figured out.
Burrow also ran for a score. Jamar Chase, 9 catches, 221 yards, pair of TDs. Clemson dethroned after winning 29 in a row. Their quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, had never before lost a game. At the Garden, Rangers pulled away, beat the Islanders 6-2. Artemi Panarin, 2 goals, numbers 25 and 26 on the year, also 3 assists. Spring training around the corner, and the Houston Astros need to hire a manager and general manager. The franchise rocked by being caught in a sign-stealing scandal where TV monitors were used in 2017 when the Astros won the World Series. Fined $5 million, 2 first and 2 second-round draft picks taken away. A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow both suspended, then fired, and Red Sox manager Alex Cora could be the next to go. He was involved in this as the Astros bench coach in 2017. Baseball put off punishing him because the investigation into what the Red Sox did when they won the series in 2018 is ongoing. But the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now with the cover on the hidden dangers of the index fund takeover. Also in this week's issue, how wildfires in Australia are shining a light on the connection between fossil fuels and climate change. Eric Roston contributed to the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
It's very difficult to dispel what's going on the ground there and the incredible suffering. Communities have been uprooted and have uncertain, at least near-term, futures.
Read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week on newsstands now and online at businessweek.com. Terminal customers can receive a complimentary subscription at MAG Go. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly, weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. At 5:38 on Wall Street, we do the Tri-State Business Report. Now here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Hey, Nathan. Well, for a Manhattan condo developer in a slowing sales market, it's an interesting promotion. Booking.com has furnished 20 unsold units at 25 Broad Street, also known as the Broad Exchange Building. It's offering its users a two-night stay for $20.20. Developer Elcor says it's a great way to showcase that property. New Jersey lawmakers have passed a bill inspired by the Toys R Us bankruptcy. It would require 1 week's pay for each year of employment for workers in the event of a mass firing from a company with more than 100 employees. Another retailer at the Stamford Town Center Mall is going to be closing. A posting on the Apple website says the company store there will be making what it calls an inspired move to the Sono Collection Mall in Norwalk. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thank you, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. McDonald's is currently testing chicken sandwiches with the additive MSG.
I'm Jeff Bullinger. And on WTBN in Columbus, I'm reporting Abercrombie & Fitch plans to shrink its footprint in 2020.
I'm Gina Cervetti. And on WFLA in Orlando, I'm reporting that as of today, your Windows 7 computer may become more vulnerable to malware and hacking.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting PG&E's $1.7 billion settlement with California could save it $470 million in taxes.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Some other stories we're watching now. Visa has agreed to acquire Plaid for $5.3 billion. Plaid is a fintech firm that connects popular apps like Venmo to customer data in the banking system. The sale price is double Plaid's valuation from a 2018 funding round. Amazon is taking the next step in its fight over a $10 billion Pentagon cloud contract. Company will ask a judge to temporarily block Microsoft from performing any substantial work on the deal. Amazon claims it lost the deal because of political interference by President Trump. And the world's largest asset manager is shunning polluters when it comes to investing. Climate change has become a defining factor in companies' long-term prospects, according to BlackRock CEO Larry Fink. In his annual letter to executives, Fink says he thinks we're on the edge of a fundamental reshaping of finance. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by Land Rover. Life's an adventure. Experience it in the new Land Rover Discovery Sport. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for details on the new Discovery Sport Land Rover. Above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks erased a decline along with U.S. stock index futures, although they're now a little changed to lower again as investors await the start of U.S. earnings season and officials prepare to sign the China trade deal in Washington. The S&P 500 and NASDAQ both rose to records yesterday, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are now down about 3 points. Dow futures down 10. NASDAQ futures down 13. The DAX in Germany little changed. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 1.83%, and the yield on the 2-year 1.57%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.33% or 22 cents at $58.30 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.33% on $5.30 at $15.45.30 an ounce. The euro, 1.1134 against the dollar. The British pound, 1.2979. And the yen is at 110.05. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the Iranian government announced they have made arrests in the accidental missile strike that downed a Ukrainian international airlines jet last week. That announcement coming shortly after President Hassan Rouhani said in a televised speech he called for a special court to be set up by the judiciary to start an investigation. All 176 people on board that jet died. Just one more debate until voting starts in Iowa. Six Democratic presidential candidates will take the stage tonight in Des Moines. Bloomberg will bring you coverage of the debate starting at 8:30 p.m. Wall Street time. In college football, LSU won the national championship, beating Clemson 42-25. In the NHL, the Rangers beat the Islanders. The Bruins lost. The Capitals won. In the NBA, the Celtics won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street, and this is Bloomberg Daybreak Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio, where Bloomberg Radio and Television finance reporter Shanali Bosick joins me as we await the kickoff of a fourth quarter earnings season with three banks reporting this morning. Shanali, going to be a very busy morning for you. What are you going to be looking for as we start to hear the results in just about an hour now from JP Morgan?
Very busy morning. So we are looking at what the fourth quarter looks like, but what's much more important is what JP Morgan and the other banks say about what the first quarter looks like, where we don't get the numbers. And so JP Morgan was actually a record stock performer through the end of last year. It was doing great, but there are issues on the horizon that they and other banks have to contend with, including perennially low interest rates.
And you got to think the one issue that might be off the table now is the trade tensions between the U.S. and China with the phase one deal getting signed tomorrow. Could we see that play into the results and the forward guidance?
So we could hear people talk about it. If you think about it, last year, people really shook off the trade war fears. Mergers and acquisitions started to rebound to a little bit better levels. It did certainly damp some optimism in the markets, for sure, and above people who are lending and doing deals. But there are new tensions now in the market. There are new geopolitical uncertainties, and there's a 2020 election ahead. So these new problems, we're going to have to, they might be worse than the old problems.
You mentioned the low interest rate environment continuing potentially to be an issue for the banks. What's the expectation of what we could hear from J.P. Morgan first on that?
So J.P. Morgan last year and around the middle of last year started to say that net interest income could be impacted. But a lot of this is being buffered by the consumer still being strong and the consumer still borrowing. Big companies, commercial lending is a different question. Corporate America is pretty overlevered right now, and you see some choppiness there. But the consumer is really strong, and that's really great. But let's see if there are further revisions downward from here, because is an expectation that net interest margins will be more under pressure.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to wonder whether some banks might perform better in an environment where consumer lending could be the bigger driver than commercial lending. How do you see that playing out?
That was the big story of last year for certain. And if you look at the big banks, J.P. Morgan, Citigroup, Bank of America tended to do a lot better in terms of stock performance than Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, which are much more heavily weighted in investment banking and trading. And so, by the way, we will definitely also be looking at the trading businesses, which are supposed to be a bright spot in the quarter, especially because of fixed income trading for all the big banks.
And there's a new accounting rule coming into play.
CECL.
A current expected credit loss. CECL rolls off the tongue quite a bit.
The bane of my existence, CECL.
Why is that?
Well, it is a very wonky accounting change. And the reality is, here's the big question. Will banks have to start to adjust their provision for loan losses much, much higher? The banks have been guiding for a while what that might look like. J.P. Morgan has said between a $4 and $6 billion range, could be less than a billion for Goldman. Sounds like big numbers, but the reality is, how much at the end of the day will it impact their ability to return capital to shareholders?
In our last 30 seconds here, we haven't mentioned Wells Fargo. They also report this morning. First call for new CEO Charlie Scharf. What question do you want answered?
Are the regulators going to get off his back?
Okay.
Well, that's the big question, because Wells Fargo cannot grow until the Federal Reserve lifts their asset cap. And it's the first priority for Charlie Scharf. He said so over and over again. And until he fixes that relationship, then we can't really see a whole lot of growth there.
Bloomberg finance reporter Shanali Bosick. Thank you, as always, Shanali. And again, we get the first results from J.P. Morgan in just about an hour here, and Citigroup and Wells Fargo later this morning as well. Full coverage here on Bloomberg Radio. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Now let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Democrats are proposing changes to the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act to attract Republican and business support. Employees would be required to notify their employer of a pregnancy and negotiate accommodations. The Seventh Circuit will not revive a suit by a former United Airlines worker who charged that the Teamsters Union did not represent him fairly when he was fired. And the fast food chain Jack in the Box promoted in-house lawyer Sarah Super to the company's top legal and compliance positions.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now we're also watching legal developments on the impeachment front, with the trial of President Trump likely to begin next week. This is after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi ended a three-week standoff over rules for the trial. For more on what's ahead, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with former federal prosecutor Robert Mintz, a partner at McCarter & English.
President Trump's tweets this weekend range from calling for a trial with Pelosi and Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff being called as witnesses, to suggesting that senators should dismiss the House charges outright. Could the Senate dismiss them outright?
I think as a procedural matter, the Senate could dismiss them outright. But remember here that both sides are really playing to public opinion. They're really playing to their bases. So a lot of things are being said knowing that they're unlikely to happen. I think Mitch McConnell knows that it would be ill-advised to simply dismiss these articles of impeachment without any kind of process at all, because he does have at least four Republican senators who are somewhat on the fence on the question of witnesses, and we're trying to come up with some kind of compromise so that witnesses can be called and there can be some process here that in some way replicates the process that was followed during the Clinton impeachment.
President Trump has already said that if former National Security Advisor John Bolton is called, that there will be questions of executive privilege. How strong an argument do they have for executive privilege?
Well, the real question about John Bolton's testimony is, first, will he testify? And second, if he does testify, what exactly will he be permitted to say? Executive privilege does cover president's deliberations with his national security advisor on issues of foreign policy. So there is a credible argument that some of these conversations that John Bolton had with the president would be protected by executive privilege, and that's a privilege that belongs to the president, not to John Bolton. So if they go into that area, if John Bolton is called to testify and questions are asked about some of those deliberations with the president, I think we can expect to see the White House exercise that right for executive privilege, and that would have to then go to the courts to be decided. I think what would ultimately happen is that they would try to work around the privilege issue and see whether Bolton could provide testimony that wasn't covered by the privilege so that the trial could continue, because going to the courts would only further delay this trial, drag it out into the Iowa caucuses and other things having to do with the Democratic primaries right now, and that's not what the Democrats are hoping to do.
And that's Robert Mintz, a partner at McCarter & English, speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures down about 3 points now. Dow futures down 11. NASDAQ futures down almost 12. And the 10-year Treasury up 2/32. Yield 1.83%. The yield on the 2-year 1.57%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.6%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.